He's got a racing sheet in his pocket. Schedule of some small racetrack in a town upstate. I've never heard of the place or the horses listed.
But then again, Nick, we don't know too much about horse racing.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything relating to the sport of kings and also sports gambling. And what a fine show on tap today. Jonathan Lintner of the Courier Journal is going to drop by, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Kentucky Derby picture. Also, Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. We're going to discuss the opening of the Major League Baseball season and how you go about handicapping Major League Baseball, because I think it's a very interesting handicapping puzzle. And speaking of handicapping, I'm going to look at a couple races, the Arkansas Derby, the Lexington Stakes, the last two big preps for the Kentucky Derby. But before I do all of that, there are a few things that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're going to remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Last Saturday was known as Super Saturday. There were three huge Kentucky Derby preps, starting off with the Wood Memorial from Aqueduct Racecourse.
As they move to the top of the stretch, it is Outwork and Matt King Cole, and the two of them turn for home together. Shagoff is trying to come and get them. Tale of Saval is running a big one, and Adventus is closing through an opening on the inside into the final furlong. It is Outwork in front. Adventus trying to go for an upset up the rail. It is Outwork and Adventist. 1-2. They will decide the Wood Memorial. Outwork and Adventist. Here's the wire. Outwork and Adventist. Bob heads under the wire in the wood. And then running, or rather, and then it was Adventist. It was Trojan Nation on the inside. The final time was 1 minute 52.92 seconds. The horse on the rail was Trojan Nation, not Adventist. It was the Maiden. So it is very close here in the wood.
You know, I like Larry Colmus a lot. He is a great race caller. I guess he went to Twitter to apologize for this call. The thing that I find funny about it, though, is you notice at the end there, it's this exciting call. There's Adventist! There's this horse! Wait a minute. That's not who was running in on the rail. And the funny thing is, you know, I know race callers don't look at the numbers necessarily. They're looking more at the silk colors and so forth. But it was pretty obvious that that wasn't Adventist on the rail. But I feel bad for Larry. He's a great race caller. These things happen. Just one of those mental things. But, you know, that last part where he just sounds so down, like, oh, my. Because you know that he knew right at that moment, like, big race, bad call. Anyway, the winner of the Wood Memorial was Outwork. And the funny thing to me is people always talk about how bad West Coast racing is. Why, the racing at Santa Anita, it's terrible. I can't believe it. You got to come east to prove your mettle. Here a horse from California, from Santa Anita, a Maiden, goes into the Wood Memorial on the East Coast and almost wins the Wood. Unbelievable. The quality of the wood, the time, I want to say I read somewhere it was the slowest in the history of the race, or one of the slowest times in the history of the race. The Equibay speed figure was not bad. It was a 102, so the track was kind of dull. The early pace, very, very fast. That's the impressive thing about Outwork. He's got all the looks of a Todd Pletcher non-contender in the Derby, though. A lot of speed, not a lot of base, not a lot of foundation. Just, I don't know. I'm just not that excited about him at this point. But a very, very gutsy win. Then, of course, there was the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland. That was an interesting race. and it went something like this.
Loudman and Star Hill, 1-2 off the far turn. Brody's Cause has work to do to catch them. They're coming to the eighth pole. Cards of Stone fourth. Cherry Wine is fifth up on the outside. My Man Sam is on the grandstand side in sixth. Brody's Cause just keeps grinding away. Cherry Wine is running late on the outside. Brody's Cause at the 16th pole. Chased by Cherry Wine. My Man Sam running huge from last. But Brody's Cause in front. Brody's Cause for Luis Saez to win the Toyota Bluegrass from My Man Sam and then Cherry Wine. Further back, Lauban, 1:50.15.
Of course, Brody's Cause was one of those horses that was very well thought of coming into this year, then had that terrible race in the Tampa Bay Derby and rebounds in the Bluegrass Stakes. This was an okay race. I'm still not sold on Brody's Cause. The pace figures here, and I've talked about my pace figures before, the ESRs, or early speed rations, are a measurement of early energy disbursement, not necessarily speed, but the lower the figure, the better. And Brody's Cause, the pace in the Bluegrass, of minus 10. That's about what you're going to see in the Kentucky Derby. The LSR, that's the late speed ration, a measurement of late energy disbursement. The higher the figure, the better, a minus 9. That's pretty average. Nothing spectacular there. Just a workmanlike performance by Brody's Cause. The big problem with Brody's Cause is just not a lot of early speed. I've talked ad nauseum about how that is a huge disadvantage in the Kentucky Derby. The next race that was run, the final of the three Kentucky Derby preps, the Santa Anita Derby.
Dancing Candy Smith eyeing the Oaks Derby double. Leads a length and a quarter. Uncle Lino running a giant race on the outside. Pulls within half length of him at the quarter pole. More Spirit 5 lengths away. Here comes Exaggerator mounting a mighty bid around the outside as they turn for home in the $1 million Santa Anita Derby. And Exaggerator has gone straight past them like they were tied to the rail. At the 8th pole, Exaggerator 5 lengths over Uncle Lino, More Spirit and Dancing Candy. But Exaggerator is finishing with conviction this afternoon. Exaggerator, an absolutely brilliant victory in the Santa Anita Derby over More Spirit, Uncle Lino and Dancing Candy fourth.
This was a very odd race because Dancing Candy just went out and blazed. In fact, I hope to have Mike Smith on a future program, maybe ask him about this. It just looked like Dancing Candy wanted to go. The ESR in this race, a minus 16. That is incredibly fast. Now, that has been done in the Derby, but those are those complete pace meltdowns. So, Exaggerator, when I first watched this race, and you remember I talked on last week's program about how much I liked Exaggerator, liked the big move on the turn. Well, he did it again. He looked so impressive coming around the turn. However, this is where, and I had this argument on Facebook about the eyes. You know, I gotta have the eyes. You gotta see what the horses look like. Well, this race looked a lot more impressive than it really was because the speedsters were coming back to the field. So it looked like Exaggerator just inhaled this group. He did inhale this group, but it wasn't as impressive as it looked. The LSR was just a minus 13. That's still poor. Now, I certainly would not throw out Exaggerator based on that. In fact, I think he probably made his stock look a lot better for the Kentucky Derby. But it just, I would just caution people not to get too swept away by this performance, because that big close was aided by the fact that the front runners were coming back and coming back very, very quickly. Nonetheless, pretty solid effort. The Equibase speed figure, just a 103, so just a point higher than Outwork. By the way, the Bluegrass produced a 99 Equibase speed figure. And now to the most impressive performance of the weekend, and it came by a filly.
Enola Gray in front, getting a pretty easy lead along to the half-mile pole by three-quarters of a length. La Premiere at 12, second on the inside from Reba Rules again, Correlation out wider. Two lengths to Lethal Legacy, 5 from the front, followed by Married to a Minister. 4 to Mai Tai, Hotsy Dotsy, and 6 lengths to Dorothy Rose Blanche. It's Enola Gray sneaking away by 4 lengths around the turn. From Reba Rules again, who's racing on the inside of Correlation, a gap of 4 lengths to Lethal Legacy, moving by the tiring La Premiere at 12, but Enola Gray just keeps going further in front. At the 3/16 pole, out to about the 5 path, and has a double digits lead. Must be 12 in front at the 8th pole. this first-timer Enola Gray. What a nice, emphatic way for our leading trainer, Phil D'Amato, to cap his winter season training title triumph. Enola Gray coasted in by about 18 lengths from Mai Tai, Hotsy Dotsy, and Reba Rules Again.
I know all of you were thinking that it was going to be Songbird in the Santa Anita Oaks. No, I think it was Enola Gray. The very next day, the seventh race, a maiden race at Santa Anita. This was a race at 6.5 furlongs, and Enola Gray just ran lights out. Unbelievably fast. A 99 buyer figure matching Songbird's highest figure ever. Now, I did a column on Songbird, got a lot of responses from it. You know, it's always amazing to me when I write something that I think is fairly innocuous or makes a reasonable point and people just go crazy. And a lot of people talking about the hate of Songbird. Well, you guys are gonna be looking pretty silly when Songbird wins again. Yeah, and you can take your 40-cent profit and buy, I don't know, a stick of gum? This is one of the other arguments I got in on Facebook about bettors and people who love horses. And the comment was that, you know, we bettors, we're always looking for these horses to lose, and we have no empathy. What are you talking about? You know, it's one of those things that actually really frustrates me. I've talked a lot about betting issues, and I've always said I'm one that really focuses on those better issues because I think it's the bettors. In fact, I don't think. I know it's the bettors that keep the game alive. If there are no bettors, there is no sport. If it's up to the people who love the horses, they're not supporting the game. So don't badmouth bettors all the time. It's just one of those huge pet peeves of mine. And then to say just because you're betting on a race that you have no empathy for the horses is absurd. Most of us who are bettors also absolutely love the game, and we love everything about the game. But that doesn't mean that when you're looking at a horse or analyzing a race, that you're going to love a horse and you can't possibly bet against it because somehow that makes you a traitor or it makes you lack empathy or whatever the case may be. My point with Songbird is I think the hype has exceeded her talent. Now, I got into an interesting discussion with a couple of people that are in the Hollendorfer barn. That, to me, was a lot more reasonable. It's always funny how a lot of the people associated with the horse are actually more reasonable. And one of the guys said, and I've known this guy for many, many years, I'm not going to give out any names here, but he said he thought about this race a lot, talking about the Santa Anita Oaks, and we'll have the stretch call in just a second. But he said, you know, I just don't think Songbird took to the surface. Okay, I can work with that. I can look at the numbers and look at the figures and say, okay, well, maybe Songbird just didn't adapt. But to say that the figures were good or that you ignore the figures because it was such an easy victory. Enola Gray won by 16.25 lengths. You look at a couple of other races on the Santa Anita Oaks card, including the Santa Anita Derby, Exaggerator won in hand. In the first race, there was a 3-year-old maiden that also won in hand. Both of them went significantly faster than Songbird. So to act as though that was the most impressive performance on the day is just absurd. In fact, I'm going to play that stretch call, then we're going to talk a little bit about the figures.
Songbird by 5 at the quarter pole. Songbird 5 lengths over Forever Darling, who's being worked upon by Pedroza to very little avail, I would suggest. Then Bellamentry and Mocat at the head of the others from She's a Warrior, but towards the 8th pole comes Songbird, completely unfazed by the conditions. The lead is 5 or 6 lengths from Mocat, who's grinding home to make a race of it with Forever Darling for 2nd, and then She's a Warrior. But Songbird is clear close to home. The result was a foregone conclusion, a long way from home. Songbird soaring to ever greater heights. She's now an Oaks winner. Mocat 2nd, followed by She's a Warrior and Forever Darling.
Okay, here's what I don't like about that race. First of all, we're going to start with the Equibase speed figure. And we could do any speed figure. It wouldn't matter. 96 Equibase speed figure for Songbird and the Oaks. That is the lowest of all three races I just talked about, the Bluegrass Stakes, the Wood Memorial, the Santa Anita Derby. The pace in the Santa Anita Oaks, I mentioned it was a minus 16 ESR in the Derby, minus 9. So if Songbird is in the Derby, and one of the things I read is that Songbird is the best 3-year-old, period. Okay, if she's in the Derby, she's got to go 7 lengths faster just to battle for the lead. Do you really think that she's going to come home even faster? Because that's the argument. Oh, when these horses are put to pressure, that's when they really shine. I once did a study of world records, and if you look at the world records, most of the horses who set them won by daylight. Look at Secretariat in the Belmont. 31 lengths. Now, he wasn't exactly being eased, but he wasn't being pushed either. And this is so common. When horses get the kind of trip that they want, they tend to run the fastest that they ever have. The fact that Songbird isn't doing that is what is concerning me a little bit. She went her final 16th in the Santa Anita Oaks, mind you, without any urging, probably under a hold, 7 seconds. Let me make a clear point here. She's under a hold, right? So she's not running hard, and that's why she went so slow. Mike Smith weighs what? 120 pounds? I'm sure he's a pretty strong guy. How much does Songbird weigh? A lot more. When these horses want to do something, generally they win. Generally they will. As was proven in the Santa Anita Derby, when Dancing Candy went out and ran a 45 half, 45 and 1, for those of you purists. Now, do you really think Smith wanted to go that fast? Probably not. But the horse kind of drug him to the lead. Let's talk a little bit about pace figures. Enola Gray, in her maiden win, a -6 ESR, -7 LSR. Now, that's the key figure here. Because when a horse is not being urged, when a horse is not being pushed, we expect, or we should expect, should we not, the LSR to get worse, to, you know, be more negative. -7 is really, really good, especially for a sprint. Songbird, on the other hand, her LSR was a -11. So about 4 lengths slower. And these are relative figures, so it doesn't matter whether it's a sprint or route. In fact, the route numbers, the route LSRs, are typically better. Because again, this is about ration speed. So in route races, you need to ration some speed, or you need to ration your speed so that you've got some energy late so you can close out the race, of course. That's not as necessary in sprints. So typically the LSRs in sprints are a lot worse. The fact that Enola Gray's LSR in a sprint race was better than Songbird's is not heard of. I shouldn't put it that way. It's now I'm going overboard with the hype. It's very, very unusual. And this is what concerns me. I'm seeing more and more from Songbird that there's been no progression from 2 to 3. Now, the connections, the folks I spoke to in the Hollendorfer barn absolutely think that if she's, you know, put to task, that she is going to rise to the occasion. That may be, but as bettors, I think we have to be on the lookout for situations like this. Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. Clue, it's probably not going to be P. Diddy, but he's on the list of betting options. And if you're a racing fan like me, you'll love the daily menu and special prop bets. Thoroughbred racing, check. International racing, check. Greyhound racing, check. Harness racing, check. Generous rebates, checkmate. USRacing.com also has a wide variety of casino games as well. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace. I'm now joined by Jonathan Lintner. He writes for the Courier Journal. Of course, Jenny Reese manned the post for many years. Now, Jonathan doing a lot of horse racing writing. How are you doing this morning, Jonathan?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Well, tell me a little bit about how, because I noticed that you're doing most of the horse racing writing now. How did you come to enjoy horse racing, or do you enjoy horse racing? I guess that should be the first question.
Well, I definitely do enjoy it. I grew up in Louisville, and that always helps. I wasn't by any means at the track every day it was open, but people here tend to go and enjoy themselves, and you know, your big days like Mother's Day at the track and Stephen Foster, and obviously the Kentucky Oaks is a big day for locals. So you grow up going to those sorts of things. And then actually my first job out of college, I went to Western Kentucky, but in Evansville, Indiana, they have Ellis Park right across the river in Henderson, Kentucky. And I will say the first time you go to Ellis Park, you appreciate Churchill Downs a whole lot more. And so it was kind of at that point that I started following the sport on more of a national scale. And when I moved to the Courier-Journal, it's kind of all hands on deck around Derby time. It's not just Jenny or it's not just me covering sports. So at that point, I kind of learned how to write a race story and write a feature about horse racing as opposed to just kind of casually betting on it. And it, you know, the interest grew. And then when Jenny decided to move on and pursue some other things, I think it was kind of natural for me to slide into that position. I'd been doing a lot of our other, you know, racing news sort of things. And then, you know, if she would go off to the Belmont, I would cover at Churchill Downs and that sort of thing. So I was already kind of her backup and got the promotion there. And I'm happy to be doing it for sure.
When you look at the great sports writers, of course, instantly Damon Runyon comes to mind. He was big in the horse racing field. And I think traditional sports has changed. And then there's not that much color in it anymore, you know, not like it was at least in the 1940s and so forth, because it always cracks me up when you see those old newsreels and, you know, you read some of the old stories. Horse racing has retained a bit of that anyway. You know, Steve Haskin writes a lot of, you know, stories that I think appeal to the horse set, because of course there's a very, you know, great distinction, I think, between the fans of horse racing. You've got the bettors and the horse fans. Do you notice that, and do you tailor your style for horse racing pieces, or is it all basically under that broad umbrella of sports to you?
Well, I kind of end up writing them all the same, just because I feel like if you throw out all the jargon of a story, you're still looking for a good story, and they're still kind of structured the same. I think what separates horse racing is that you can't quote the horses, so you kind of have to do some of the talking for them. You can't just put no comment in every story. You know, American Pharoah had no comment. So you end up adding that sort of color and flair because, you know, he can't say he had a good race, or he can't say he ran into a tough trip. You know, you have to kind of do that analysis. And I think that's where racing writing, you know, it lets a writer, you know, be a little more opinionated and analytic, which is, I feel like, where journalism is going anyway. In other fields, you know, if you were to just write that, you know, Cam Newton had a bad game for the Panthers, you know, and you don't give Cam Newton a chance to say that, you run into trouble. So I feel like that's where the big difference is. It just, you know, your subjects can't speak as much, except for the trainers and the owners and the jockeys doing so on their behalf.
Let's turn our attention to the Kentucky Derby. I was looking at the fixed odds at U.S. Racing, and of course Nyquist, the favorite, at 3-1. Mohamed, I thought, was interesting at 5-1. Of the horses that look like they might go now, and of course a lot of things will change in the weeks ahead, any horses that you're surprised about, any horses you think might offer some value, horses you don't think offer value?
I think it's a tough question at this point because you don't know exactly who's in the field. But if you look at the trend of the last 3 years in the Derby point system, the winner has won his last prep before the Derby. I think this could be a year where that does not happen, especially given how many of those horses had to run over off tracks and just didn't handle it in the 100-point preps. You know, more spirit than Mohamed, I mean, going in is, you know, arguably the 1, 2, or 3 ticks, you know, suddenly you're going to get, like you were saying, those horses at 5-1 or even higher in the Derby because Exaggerator was able to handle the flop and Outwork was able to run over the mud. So, you know, depending on what you thought of those horses before they lost their races, I think that there's some added value there because I wouldn't really discount them a whole lot for the way they ran in those races. You know, looking down the board, I think, you know, it's kind of a what have you done for me lately sort of thing. And Destin obviously is not going to have done anything for anybody lately because he hasn't run since the Tampa Bay Derby. I think that you'll get a pretty decent price on him. And also considering Todd Pletcher's record in the Derby, you know, same thing there. And then some of these horses on the bubble, you know, like the Motoms, the North, like that. I mean, you know, the only reason Motom doesn't have the points to get in the field necessarily is because of two extremely bad trips, you know, about as bad as they can possibly get. So I kind of look at those horses for value at this point.
Do you subscribe to the theory that the competition counts? This has become a big thing now, of course, with Songbird. By the way, just a quick tip, don't ever say that Songbird is overrated. You'll be inundated with emails and Facebook posts, Jonathan. So just a little tip from me, having done that recently. Look at a horse like Trojan Nation. You know, this is a horse that was campaigning on the West Coast. A maiden, you know, had been running in maiden races, goes to the Wood Memorial on the East, finishes second. Of course, we always have that East you know, coast, west coast debate. Does that downgrade a race like the Wood for you, or do you just look at that as, hey, you know, maybe this horse is improving?
Yeah, well, first of all, I read your Songbird thing. I didn't think it was that bad or that outlandish. I mean, you're probably just the first person to say it and, you know, caught a lot of crap for it. But, you know, somebody needed to say it. I'll put that out there. Anyway, as far as the Wood, I didn't need a maiden to finish second in the Wood for me to probably toss the winner anyway. It's just been that sort of race in recent years, not even really in recent years, you know, going way back. So I think that people figure the horses on the West Coast and come out of Florida are probably the best ones just because they've had the weather to train and be consistent running up to the Derby. You know, it's something that Doug O'Neill has said a lot about Nyquist is he only has two races, but he has quite a foundation under him. You know, first of all, dating back to his two-year-old season, but also the consistent work he's been able to do in the morning in terms of his long works and good weather and not having to worry about it getting disrupted because of snow and rain and those sorts of things. So I think that that's where you give probably the West Coast horses an edge, and you've definitely seen that in the Derby the last 2 years.
Thanks for the vote of confidence on the Songbird piece, and actually this question relates to that. Because a lot of times I write certain pieces, and admittedly, it's in a stronger tone. You know, I feel like in racing, you have an opinion or you don't. But at the same time, I look at some of the stats and present stuff and basically present data. And I'm sometimes surprised by the reaction. Obviously, you've been a journalist for a while anyway. Have you ever been surprised by the reaction to a piece that you thought was fairly innocuous and people get all up in arms about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, comes down sometimes to the wording and the tone, like you were saying. I mean, you know, if you're a writer and you have to use facts, and you know, fans of horses don't necessarily want to use facts because to them, Songbird could lose a race and she could still be the best horse because, you know, she's Songbird, or in the past, she's Zenyatta or Rachel Alexander. I mean, it's all kind of the, you know, cut from the same cloth in terms of the following that those horses are developing. So, I mean, horse racing is a fact-based game. I mean, you look at the numbers, and she hasn't faced a whole lot. I still think she'd probably be the Derby favorite if they threw her in there. I don't necessarily think I would put her on top of my own bets. But, yeah, you get that just because I think that from a journalist's perspective, you're looking at things so differently than a fan.
All right, it is that time. It is the random question segment.
That's so random.
You want answers?
What'd you say?
Right.
Funny how.
Lucy, why don't you answer me?
You're not a eunuch, are you?
What do you all know about death?
Do you have any marijuana I might be able to buy from you?
Is it true that you're in the middle of a nervous breakdown?
Who said that?
Why do you say you feel trapped in a man's body?
All right, Jonathan, these are literally random questions off the web. Some of them make no sense at all. So the first question I got for you, if you had the chance to be invisible for one day, what would you do? And before you answer, I'm just going to warn you, if this involves Aaron Andrews in any way, rethink it. What would you do if you were invisible for a day?
Oh, geez. Well, obviously, you go somewhere where you can't. I don't even know. This is going to be tough for me, man. Next question.
All right, that's fair enough. Because trust me, some of these you can't answer. In fact, I don't know if they solicit people and they're just, you know, questions that they have. I don't know. What superhero power would you have, or would you most like to have?
I would definitely like to teleport. I mean, above all, that's got to be the most convenient, you know, realistic to help you thing is teleport.
Okay, and this one I kind of like because you look young to me, so I'm curious about this myself. At what age do you consider a person to be old?
Oh, 60. My parents are 55, so I can't call them old.
Very good, my friend. Hey, it's been great chatting with you. Hope you have a great run-up to the Derby, and hopefully we do this again.
All righty. Thanks,
Derek. All right, take care, Jonathan.
Now, here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
You sick, saucy.
When you walk in that door on your two legs all fat and cocky,
you, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps.
just have 2 reps of water drinking. Usually we do 10 reps of everything, so do another rep of water drinking.
Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com is back. And before we get into Major League Baseball, Kevin, what do you think about Kobe's swan song?
How many more shots could he have taken? I mean, my goodness, the guy took 50 shots. And you know what? There were actually two really bad beats in the NBA on Wednesday night. If you had the Miami Heat, who were up by 26 in the second quarter, and they were getting, I think, five and a half against the Celtics, and Boston came back and won and covered. And then you look at the Lakers, they were down 10, and I get that, you know, it's not a big deal. With 2.5 minutes left, and Utah was laying 4.5, and the Lakers scored the final 15 points of the game, that one really hurts. If you had the Jazz last night, obviously Utah had nothing to play for when they knew the Rockets won earlier. But still, a couple of bad beats last night. Kobe, he closes out his career, on a really high note. And it was a disastrous last few years for the Lakers. I never had a problem with Kobe. I respect what he did. But at the same time, I'm glad that they could close the book on him and we could move on from the Lakers just being as bad as they are and him kind of handicapping that franchise in a sense by him, you know, keep playing when really they need to rebuild and getting tied up $30 million a year or whatever it was with him when he's broken down. They needed to kind of move on, so I'm glad it's finally over.
I agree with you. The one thing that bothers me in the Kobe saga is if you look at those last 2 years, the shooting percentage. You know, when you're shooting 35, 34%, that's why last night was kind of refreshing in that he took 50 shots, he made 22, so 44%. I know that's not great, but it's a lot better than what he's done for the season. Let's turn our attention to Major League Baseball. First thing I want to ask you, Kevin, as we, you know, get started now on yet another new season, baseball handicapping to me is kind of funny because a lot of people believe that it's all about the pitchers. You know, whatever that matchup is, that you look at that and that's how you come up with what a fair line is. How do you go about handicapping baseball?
I mean, it's never an easy process as opposed to other sports where you have constants. Taking away injuries, or you look at basketball or football, you know pretty much this is going to be your set players for the whole game. In baseball, you always have that different dynamic every single day, which obviously when you see the lines, you know certain guys, they're going to have a jacked up price because of how good they are or not because maybe they're not as good of a pitcher. So, you know, you definitely have to make or take that into major consideration. But also I like to look at two things. One, if they're in the middle of a series, how the series has developed so far, and if a team would be avoiding a sweep or pulling off a sweep, maybe look at things a little differently. And then if it's a new series, that how did you respond in your last series, whether, you know, if you're coming back from a long road trip or you had a successful homestand and now you're going on the road. I just think that there are so many different factors that you have to put in besides the starting pitcher. I am sort of a reactive handicapper that I look and see what these teams did. I know that's not like a crazy notion to do, but there are certain handicappers that may not look at that. They may look just straight up at the numbers where I say, no, if this team hasn't played well of late, will they come back? Will they bounce back today? Or will they have a letdown maybe? No matter who the pitcher is, that, you know, this team, I'll give you a perfect example because you are out in Colorado. When the Padres got swept by the Dodgers in the opening series and got shut out in every single game, they went to Colorado for that first game. I loved San Diego in that game because everyone was so down on the Padres for what they did the first three games against one of the elite teams in the National League, and Colorado is in rebuilding status, and Colorado had a nice series at Arizona winning two of the first three. I just figured this is a great spot. You get away from home. I always love taking teams that have awful home losses or home stands, depending on what the sport is, because now I think you get refreshed on the road, you clear your mind, and the Padres went nuts in a few of those games, and especially Friday, the bats woke up because they weren't facing the Dodgers anymore, and the Rockies were overvalued, and that's kind of where these spots, you know, you look at San Diego, I'll be honest, I don't even remember who pitched in that game for San Diego because it didn't matter to me. I just knew that their bats were going to get back, and there was value there as an underdog in that situation.
I wanted to ask you about that because we've talked about streaks before, and a lot of times, you know, we kind of underplay that in other sports. In baseball, I wonder a little bit. I remember, obviously, you know, being a Seattle fan and kind of a Colorado fan. I hate the ownership group, so I'm not really as big of a Rockies fan. But I look at a pitcher like Felix Hernandez, dominant pitcher, but he went through a streak last year where he was awful. He was just getting shelled. There was talk about whether he was injured. Does that play a bigger part in baseball, streakiness, either of a star hitter, star pitcher, or the team as a whole?
Well, I'll give you an example of one last year was Corey Kluber, who won the Cy Young the previous season for the Cleveland Indians. And he just, I don't know if everything went his way 2 years ago or whatever the case may be, but last year, I believe the Indians started 0-8 in his first 8 starts. And some of those starts, he really didn't pitch that poorly. It wasn't like he wasn't that good. It has to do with, you know what, you can lose a game 2-1, pitch great, and you have nothing to show for it. And that's kind of the bad thing about baseball is the numbers, it's not that they lie and say you have to look deeper and see, okay, maybe there was an error committed. Maybe he just had one bad inning. And it doesn't look that bad, but a win is a win and a loss is a loss. And Corey Kluber last year, who was money in the bank 2 years ago, last year it was great fading him because he could never get it going. And it almost seemed like, you know, you would feel that, is he going to break through? I never really believed, I guess to go back and answer your question, I never really believe in so-and-so has lost 5 straight, so I'm going to keep going against them. Because I do believe that today's a new day. And if the matchup is right, maybe you'll beat this team. And that's where, you know, certain handicappers say, ride the streak. You know, either if it's a winning streak, take them. If it's a losing streak, go against them. I don't really fall into that case. And it's not because, you know, a 6-game losing streak is, you know, this trend that doesn't matter. I think it does matter, but why can't they end it today? Or why can't this team lose today? That's always kind of where I've gone. So streaks, to me, they may play a part in it. If you find value in the play, you know, if a guy like Corey Kluber, let's just say, has lost 5 straight and now he's an underdog, maybe I'll take a shot at him because now there's value, but I'm not going to lay 200 with him either when he's been pitching poorly. So that's kind of where, again, in baseball, there are so many different factors where you got to find that balance in a sense. And everyone's going to do it differently. Baseball seems like that kind of sport where, oh, this is easy, just pick the winner. You have no point spread. It should be easy to pick the winner. And yet, it's a lot more difficult than it seems just because this is the one sport where you have so many other factors than other sports.
Kevin, because of that mentality, that pick the winner, and I got to tell you a little story about a recent article I wrote about a horse by the name of Songbird, who is the juvenile 3-year-old Philly champion. She has been dominant this year, and she is getting hammered. And I made the point that as the hype train leaves the station now, you're not going to get a fair price on this horse, and she's an underlay. Had a lot of people argue with me, say, hey, a win is a win, a loss is a loss. It's hard to get across, and we've talked about this before, too. It's hard to get across the fact that we're dealing in probabilities. When you look at baseball, because we are looking at a line now instead of a spread, how do you determine value or the lack thereof?
I think it goes back, again, to form, that to see what these teams have done. And again, and I think I've said this to you when we talked about football a few months ago, was, you know, I'm the kind of guy that likes to handicap when I see, all right, who has bailed on this team? Who has bailed on this pitcher where now I can grab value? That's what it is. Again, not Felix Hernandez, I'm going to lay 180 with him. No, and he's lost 5 straight. No, that's not the play to make. It's the play of, all right, this team hasn't played very well, and now you're getting them as an underdog. Maybe people have quit on them, that this is the time to take them. And obviously that applies not only in baseball but in every sport. Mm-hmm. And that's where I like to go with some of these teams or some of these pitchers and say, all right, just wait it out. I don't need to take him this game or this game, but you know what? Maybe the next game, if he loses today, this could be a good spot to take him, or he's got good numbers. Let's see if the odds makers drop the number on him somewhat. So that's kind of where I go with it, that I want to see where the odds makers, they totally undervalue certain guys. And on the flip side, if they overvalue certain guys, that there can be a pitcher that, you know, has been great for a few starts that maybe isn't as good as he may seem. And there was one I actually lost on a few days ago. And believe it or not, Derek, I have lost some games before. that the Pittsburgh Pirates, they played Detroit. They've been playing a four-game series, two in Detroit and two in Pittsburgh. But the second game of that series, Juan Nicasio, you remember him, he pitched for the Rockies a few years ago. He is with the Pirates now. He had a great spring training. He had a great first start against the Cardinals, and he beat them. And now all of a sudden in that second game that he pitched, the line was dropping in Pittsburgh's favor. He figured, okay, Pittsburgh won the opener. Maybe they'll steal this next one. And what happened, he ends up getting racked. This was the time to go against him, where he's coming off a terrific start at home, and now he's facing a Detroit lineup that's loaded, that, you know, with Miguel Cabrera, and they picked up Justin Upton in the offseason, that they have all these guys that can hit, where St. Louis's offense has kind of taken a little bit of a step back this year, that this is the time where the value was with Detroit, because they were a short favorite. You haven't spent too much on him, and this guy was going to take a step backwards because he came off such a great start. So that's kind of where, again, you don't do that with a Felix, with a David Price, with a Kershaw or Bumgarner or any of the elite pitchers. It's those average pitchers to kind of – I think those are the guys you keep an eye on more than the aces, because the aces, you're going to get no value on them. That if you keep an eye on more of the average pitchers – and you see which ones have maybe overshot themselves, that they're not really as good as they may seem, find the spot where, okay, they're going to get racked today. Or on the flip side, if there are some of those guys that haven't pitched very well, maybe if you get them as a huge dog, maybe that's the time to pull the trigger on them, because then they'll eventually pitch well. So, again, that's where you have to just keep your eyes open. But I have the same theme in a lot of sports, is that I don't like taking Duke basketball games in college basketball. I don't like taking the Cowboys. I don't like taking those teams going for or against. It doesn't make a difference, because that's what everyone's going to be on. You try to find more of the under-the-radar stuff, and I think you'll find better value.
I'm so glad we talked about this, because I want listeners to really pay attention here, that whether it's horse racing, it's baseball, it's football, that idea that as a team gets more hype than it deserves, less hype than it deserves, a player, whatever the case may be, that's where the value is found. It's not always about the ability. It's not, well, this guy is definitely going to win, because it's just not the way things work. And people just have that tendency to think that once it's over, that's the only way it could have gone. And I go back to the Minnesota-Seattle playoff game last year. You know, when he's lining up for that kick, that's a Minnesota win. Nobody's thinking Seattle wins that. And you can't possibly look after that game and say, well, Seattle was, you know, definitely going to win that game. Lots of different outcomes. Now, I'm not going to ask you for any picks today, Kevin, but tell me a little bit about the futures. Have you looked at any of these, any teams that you're looking at that you think might offer value in some of those future pools?
You know, something in Major League Baseball, and I'm not trying to, like, evade the question, but in Major League Baseball now, I think that we've seen a great change as far as you don't really know who that team is going to be that could make the run. The Mets were a team last year. I think they were hovering around 500 at the All-Star break, and they went on that big run in the second half. That we see these five-game series in the first round of the playoffs that almost anybody can win. That I don't think anybody believed Toronto was going to go as far as they did until about 2 months in last year. The Royals, obviously, you know, with them being in the World Series the year before, were going to be a team that was going to make a run because the AL Central wasn't very strong last year. And we saw how the Cubs finally came about. Like, the Cubs have played great so far, but I don't know how much value there is on the Cubs, just because if you got them in a five-game series, you know, with a team like a San Francisco or an L.A. with really good pitching, they could get shut down. So that's where I don't really know right now if there is that team that you think can make that run. And obviously it's very early in the season, but you know, you just never know. I don't want to take the Cubs. Or I mean, you look at Baltimore, they've started off on fire. They were 7-0 before they finally lost a game. And we know that the Orioles are a talented team. They have a very good lineup. The bullpen is excellent. Starting pitching is a little shaky, though. So I don't know if you want to try to take a chance on them. But then again, the Royals, they last year, and actually last 2 years, great bullpen, sound lineup, not great starting pitching, and they still won the whole thing. So really, and I know they got Johnny Cueto at the trade deadline, which helped them. But at the same time, they didn't have elite starting pitching, and they still won the whole thing. So I guess the factor is if your bullpen is very good and you have a lineup that can produce runs, if you can get by with not so great starting pitching.
Hey, it's been a great discussion, Kevin. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you so much, Derek.
Grab your PPs, everybody. It is time for handicapping. Of course, PPs, short for past performances. And today we're going to look at a couple of races, the Arkansas Derby and also the Lexington Stakes. I think we'll start with the Lexington Stakes. And I'm just going to go over this very, very quickly because we're kind of running long in terms of the show time anyway. And if I can find my stuff, I never have it ready. This is the problem here. Where is the Lexington? I think this is it here. All right, we're going to see if this works. Here we go. All right. So the first horse is One More Round. This horse is 30-1 on the morning line. I actually kind of like this horse. Let's first of all talk a little bit about the pace. The projected ESR is a -8. The projected LSR a -6. One More Round is the fastest horse in the race. He is also breaking from the rail, which pretty much assures that he's going to try to go for the lead or he's going to be shut off and cut off. Here's what I like about him. In his very first race, it was a maiden claiming affair, and he was claimed for $75,000. 71 speed figure. By the way, this is my own speed figure, so it doesn't really relate to any out there. But the point I want to make is you're going to see the progression here. The next race that he was in was a maiden special weight race, an 84 speed figure. And then last time, another maiden special weight, a 94. So he's showing a really, really nice speed figure ascension, and he's still a maiden. Last time, a -7 ESR, -3 LSR. He's never gone that fast late. It was his first try at a route. I don't know. I think he fits. Because if you look at some of the horses in here, their best races, there's some doubt as to whether they're going to repeat them. So at 31... on the morning line, I think One More Round definitely should be considered. We will move on to Direct Message. This is another horse that made rapid strides last time. He actually broke his maiden. He's out of Bernardini. Or did I say out of? I always say that, and then I get people telling me, you're not out of a sire. I get that. He's from Bernardini. So let me get that straight. Direct Message, a Godolphin horse. Last time, really, really good figures. A -6 LSR. He came from just off the pace. The question that I have about him is, will he adapt to a faster pace? In his previous races, which again were nowhere near as good as his last race, there was a faster pace and he wasn't great. That being said, I do think he's improving. He's another one that I think needs to be considered, and he's 15-1 on the morning line. The number three horse, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, and I don't think too highly of this horse. He came from off the pace last time, -6 LSR, but the speed figures in general are light. Let us move on to the number four horse. This is Swipe. Now, here's an interesting horse. First of all, Keith DeSormo trains, and you don't have Kent DeSormo riding, which is interesting, but he raced last in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. That was 168 days ago, or will be 168 days ago, when this race takes place on Saturday. 7 starts, 1 win, 5 second place finishes. He was second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I'm not sure what they're trying to accomplish here. Now, horses have won the Kentucky Derby on very few preps. In fact, I was just briefly looking through the history. Regret made her first start in the Kentucky Derby as a 3-year-old and won the race. In fact, it was her first route try as well. She'd won the Sanford and the Hopeful at Saratoga. And of course, she was the first filly to win the Kentucky Derby in 1915. In 1918, Exterminator also made his first start of the year in the Kentucky Derby. It was his first start at a route. It was his first stakes victory. The difference here, and you're probably getting this by the fact that I've gone back so far, is that the Kentucky Derby did not have the same stature. It was not prepared for in the same way, especially by a lot of these old-time trainers. So what is Swipe going to do? He's going to run in this race and then run in the Derby? So one prep? It's just hard to believe that he's going to be ready. And the fact that they're so late in getting this horse to the races makes me think there were maybe some issues. And they couldn't get him to the races earlier. That, too, is not a great sign. So when I talked earlier about the first two horses and how they fit in this race, the best speed figure by Swipe is a little bit better than the first two horses, but we have no idea whether he's going to run that. As a general rule, you're going to see some improvement from two to three, but this is his first start. So I just have some doubts. Now, he's been very well prepared. He's had a lot of long workouts. In fact, had a mile workout, a couple of six-furlong workouts, actually several six-furlong workouts. So he's definitely ready, but he's a closer. There's a decent pace in here, but it's nothing overwhelming. So I could see Swipe getting on the board, you know, collecting a minor check again. I'm not sure that he wins this race. We'll move on to the next horse. This is the five-horse Synchrony. And this horse is intriguing to me. He made a nice move on the turn in the Southwest, but did not run well in that race. He's another one that I think fits in here. And if he runs back to some of those other races or progresses at all, I think he could definitely be a contender. He is 10-1 on the morning line. That brings us to Big Squeeze. This horse ran very, very well last time, but unlike the number one horse, I just don't know if he progresses further. He has made great strides in his career so far. I just worry that he's not going to get anywhere near the same pace to run into, and he's one that likes to press. He's going to get a much faster pace today. I have a feeling that could be, you know, kind of a mid-pack early position, and I don't know how he's going to respond from there. And I think he's a little too low on the morning line because of that. He could definitely win, but 10-1 I think is too low. Call the Colonel is next. This horse has been nowhere near fast enough. He's had 10 starts. Just not a huge fan of this horse in this spot. Riker had also run in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, finished sixth. He was on the pace that day. And then last time in the Tampa Bay Derby, he pressed the pace and faded badly. He's the classic example. I've brought up this kind of horse before. He's out of the Team Valor. He comes from the Team Valor connections. He is a front runner who's not very fast. In fact, he won all of his races, his first four races at Woodbine, over that synthetic track. Now, normally that's great when you can wire a field over a synthetic track. That is actually doing something that I think is pretty impressive. But the ESRs were horrible. When he won the Gray, that's at a mile and a 16th. It was his first route attempt, a zero ESR. That's like a turf figure. And then, of course, he runs a great LSR, so-so speed figure. Before that, he'd won a 7-furlong sprint, a +2 ESR, +2. And mind you, he's beating four other rivals in these races. So just not a lot of competition, and the ESR is nowhere near good enough. In the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, a -5 ESR. That's really not that fast. And he still faded to sixth. He wasn't beaten badly, but it wasn't a great performance. And then last time in the Tampa Bay Derby, a -1 ESR could not get the job done. I don't like Riker's chances here. 6-1 on the morning line. Again, I think that's too low. He could get the lead, but it's not likely. And if he does get the lead, he's going to have to go a lot faster than he has. And I've always said in those situations, you have to make sure that you're getting a price. I don't think you will on Riker because of the connections and because of the high-profile races in his past performances. Yo Carm is next. This is the 9-horse. Another horse that is really, really light when it comes to speed figures. And so I would insist on a huge price on Yo Carm. Collected, the number 10 horse is the morning line favorite for good reason. Bob Baffert, the trainer. Castellano, the rider. Here's the issue that I have. Last time in the Sunland Festival of Racing, or whatever that race was called, it was basically the Sunland Derby renamed with not anywhere near the purse. He was even odds. He wired the race, but he rated on the lead, and the ESR was just a -3. Generally, you want horses to rate. But going forward, those races typically have to be discounted because, just like I was talking about earlier when I talked about Songbird, it is an ideal trip for the front runner. When you can go out, you can get the lead, and you can right back, let the competition come to you, and then take off again. That is exactly what most front runners want to do. So then when you do that on top of a minus three ESR, I've just got some issues. I have a feeling that today the horse will stock. Now, his previous races in the Southwest and the Sham are not bad. In fact, he came off the pace to win the Sham. But he's going to have to move forward today. And here's the thing. This is why price plays such a huge factor. If this horse is 20-1, he looks great to me. At 2-1, I don't feel like I'm getting the kind of price I need knowing the kind of trip that this horse is going to get, because it's not going to be the same trip as last time. So as a handicapper, you can basically throw that last race out. So now let's look at the rest of his past performances. Well, guess what? All of those speed figures, all of those pace figures, just make him a contender. They don't make him the best horse. And when you've got a horse that's the 2-1 morning line favorite, and you've got Bob Baffert as your trainer, I think you need more than just a contender. So collected certainly figures, but is not a horse that I would be using. I think you could see a decent price in this race. In fact, it's kind of interesting because the Arkansas Derby and the Lexington are kind of complete opposite types of races. So let us move on to the Arkansas Derby. The key here is looking at my pace profile report. The projected ESR, minus six. That, my friends, is not very fast. The Kentucky Derby par is about a minus 9 or minus 10, so about 5 lengths faster. I talked about the Santa Anita Derby. They went minus 16. That's 10 lengths faster early. So guess what you're looking for in this kind of race? A front runner. Guess who the favorite is? Guess who's got the fastest overall ESRs? It's Cupid's race to lose. It really is. Horse is going to have to go out and press him. I'm not sure that can happen. We'll kind of go through the field here. We'll start with discreteness. This is a horse that's kind of slow. His last two races in the Southwest and the Rebel were not good. He comes from off the pace. Pace figures aren't great. Speed figures aren't great. 20-1, I think, is about fair. Cut a corner is 50-1, and it's the same thing. His pace figures are even worse, and his speed figures are even worse, and he comes off the pace. Creator, his first race, way off the pace. In fact, his last race in the Rebel, way off the pace, and for the most part, he is a one-run closer. So-so pace figures, so-so speed figures. I don't know if that cuts it. Sudden breaking news, 5-1 on the morning line. He's going to get a lot of attention, I can guarantee it, because he won the Southwest. A lot of people remember just how fast he motored home. Here's the difference. In the Southwest, there was a minus 12 ESR for the pace setter. I mentioned it's a minus 6 projected today. It could go faster than that, obviously. This is just a projection. But let's say it does go the minus 6. Now you've got a horse that's a one-run closer. He's never close early. He's always in the back half of the field, almost always near the very tail of the field. Now he's going to have to run into a much slower pace. He already showed in the Rebel that when the pace was just marginally slower, he couldn't get the job done. Speed figures are just mediocre. There's nothing great here. In fact, he's going to have to progress to win this race just on speed figures alone, and he's going to get a unfavorable pace scenario. 5-1, too low on Sudden Breaking News, and I guarantee you're going to hear a lot of people talking about him. American Pioneer, probably a lot of people won't be talking about. This horse deserves a strong look and a second look and probably a third look. He just broke his maiden. This has been kind of a recurring theme with these last two prep races, but very, very impressive LSRs. A minus 3 last time and a minus 4 the time before that. And what I like about American Pioneer is he has come from 5th at the first call in each of his last two races. He's been fairly close, but he's come from off the pace. He should get the typical kind of pace he's been running against in Saturday's race. We know that he can close. I love the progression from his first race to his second race. He's well-bred, great connections. Wayne Catalano, of course, wins a ton of races. So American Pioneer at 8-1 on the morning line, absolutely deserves a look. Unbridled Outlaw is next. He's okay. Last race, a decent effort, but it was on the pace with a -3 ESR. He was also second at the first call in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Once again, he's one of those very slow front runners. So, you know, so much of it here comes down to what do you want to do with him? Because any horse, if you push them, they can run faster early. But it's not natural. And I don't see that with Unbridled Outlaw. I see him having to come off the pace. He fits in this field, and I like the fact that this is his second start off of a layoff, so he could move forward. I don't know if 10-1 is a great price. I actually think that's probably about fair on him. Dazzling Gem is next. Dazzling Gem is 12-1 on the morning line. He's 6-1 on my win factor line. His run in the Louisiana Derby was actually very, very good. He's another front-running type. He's more of a presser. Last time, the ESR was not great, a -4, but he held on really well, and what I really like is that he upped his speed figure considerably. And mind you, he's only got three starts. He started in a maiden special weight, then went to an allowance race, non-winners won other than, and then the Grade 2 Louisiana Derby. I think he fits in this field, and if he moves forward again, or even stays where he was last time, I think he's a contender. Whitmore, now we're going back to that other kind of horse that I don't really like in this race. He's 9-2. So he's another one there's going to be a lot of buzz about. He was second in the Rebel, second in the Southwest. He's not going to get the kind of pace that he did. Now, he's a little bit closer. And the thing I really liked about his run in the Rebel is that he made a big move on the turn. I talk about this all the time and what it means for the Kentucky Derby. So I want you to keep a sharp eye on this horse. Because if he runs another decent race, he's not a bad Kentucky Derby candidate if he's got the points to get in. I don't think he's a great candidate in this race. Once again, because of the pace scenario and because his figures are only ho-hum, and I just think he's too low on the morning line to offer any real value. Luna De Loco is the next horse. Another horse, not very fast. In fact, quite slow and taking a pretty big jump up in class. His last attempt at graded company was the Southwest, and he finished 13th, second to last, beaten by 22 lengths. That brings us to Cupid. I mentioned after the Rebel that Cupid's pace figures in that race were sensational. -9 ESR, -5 LSR. He did get a bit of a breather, but he didn't rate in the classical sense. Cupid actually rated from the second call to the head of the stretch and then kicked clear again. I think this horse has a lot of ability, and he definitely fits well here. He's the one to beat. I mean, it's Bob Baffert, Martin Garcia, and you've got a horse that is likely. In fact, put it this way. The -6 projected ESR is slower than he went last time by about 3 lengths when he won the Rebel. So what odds do you put on him now? He's 5-2, coming off of a maiden victory in the Rebel. And by the way, in that maiden victory, what really stood out to me is a huge jump in speed figure and then a 0 LSR. And of course, last time he finished very well. So Cupid, a very deserving favorite in the Arkansas Derby. What this is going to come down to, honestly, is whether or not anybody wants to go out and challenge him, push him, and then see what happens. But he did come off the pace in that maiden race at Santa Anita. So I think this horse stands a big, big shot in here, unfortunately, at a pretty low price, 2-1 on the morning line. That brings us to Gray Sky. He's an interesting one. He made a nice move on the turn in the Rebel and then flattened out. And that was a slightly better effort than what we'd seen in previous races. He was okay in the Smarty Jones. He's a huge long shot, and I think he stands a shot to round out some tickets. I think the same can be said for Gettysburg. Now, this is a Todd Pletcher trainee. You'll remember in the Sam F. Davis, he ran horribly. And I actually liked him that day, or at least one of my reports liked him quite a bit. He did not run very well at all. Looked like a one-dimensional front runner in that race. Pressed the pace and then faded. Last time in that Sunland race, he was second throughout, but he held on very, very well. And in fact, the speed figure was a progression. So he's interesting here. That last race has got a lot of super saver You know, I see a lot of Super Saver in that last race. So he's going to be one to watch. He is 6-1 on the morning line. That's probably about fair. If you get a good price on Gettysburg, I definitely think he figures in there. So anyway, that is the Arkansas Derby, and that, my friends, is the show. I want to thank my guests today. I want to thank all of you for listening, and I'll talk to you again next week.